You're listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast, bringing you the best of geek from week to week. Join your hosts, Dion and Quinny, and the occasional special guest as they talk movies, TV, gaming, toys, comics, and everything in between.
How come we can't ever have just like a salad?
Be grateful, Juan Pablo. Today is especially delicious.
Where were you last night?
I went to a wrestling match. Lucha Libre.
You went to watch a wrestling match?
Kind of.
Nacho, you are a great fighter. The children need a real hero.
We gotta take it to the next level.
For someone who needs your help, only then will God bless you in battle.
The orphans, they need me. I am Nacho, the luchador.
Nacho!
Who?
Where is your robe?
It was stinky, but these are my recreation clothes.
They look expensive.
Thank you.
Hello, and welcome to the end of Wrestle Turbo. Yes, that's right. It's time for the Periodic Table of Awesome with Dion and Jill and Peter and Quinny and yeah!
Hola, mi amigos!
I'm sad it's the end of Wrestle Turbo. But thank you all for bearing with me.
Yes, that's okay. I love it.
Yeah, we're ending on, I don't know, is it a bang? Is it a whimper? What are we ending on? I don't know.
We're ending on liberté for all. Yeah. We're getting into like not just the Americanized idea of wrestling, we're going international.
Oh man. I would have loved it if we could have found a film like it was like a Japanese wrestling film.
There are ones that exist.
WrestleTober doesn't have to be over just because.
WrestleTober lives in you.
Yes. WrestleTober lives on all of us. Isn't that right, Pete? Is WrestleTober living on in you?
I'm not even sure whether she's frozen or whether she's just angry.
just not engaging in WrestleTober at this stage at all. I think. You kind of drew me in at the beginning, and then I might have been kind of gradually drifting off since then.
Aww.
So you're sort of surprised with the wrestler, and then, you know, emotionally shattered by the Iron Claw,
mm-hmm.
and then confused by fighting with my family.
Just out of curiosity, yes. Can everyone else hear my background?
It's
fun and distracting for me, but I'm glad it's not coming through the audio. I've just got
great
very
stuff.
Very angry feet on my upstairs neighbors.
Oh, you're wrestling. You're wrestling with your own demons there.
Yeah, yeah.
They're wrestling with something.
Exactly.
I was going to say, is it angry feet or is it like more kind of furious?
We don't need to know. We're making stuff up. We can't hear a thing. It's great.
Okay, yeah, good. I'm glad. So, what happened is at the beginning of the month, you showed me a film that, at the time it came out, I didn't watch it because I didn't think I'd like it, and I was wrong. And at the end of the month, you showed me a film that I didn't watch at the time because I didn't think I'd like it, and I was not wrong.
I'm loving the facial. I'm loving the hair.
So WrestleTober has lost its sheen for me a little bit.
Oh, no.
So you're not going to run out and purchase the Nintendo DS game of Nacho Libre, which they did make.
In our group chat that y'all don't get to necessarily hear about that often, Dion's like, ahead of tonight's show, just so you know, watch this. And it is the shittiest looking Nintendo DS fucking game that you could possibly imagine. Yes, the dual screen.
I think it's still better than the E.T. tie-in game.
Yeah, well, yes, let's everything is better than the ET tie-in game. But yeah. The thing that really got me was how on brand it felt for this movie. Like, you know, it felt just the right amount of shit to be alongside Nacho Libre.
Look, yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be said about this film, I think, in both good and bad. Maybe not as much good. Maybe it's not really great. We could just talk about the bad. But it is actually interesting when you start delving into it a little bit. Like, it's an interesting sort of melange of stuff that went into making it. That
I'll
is
tell you, sure. It's loosely based on a true story as well.
What?
Yes.
Holy shit. Is like everything in WrestleToba loosely based on some kind of vaguely true story?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. See?
Amazing.
And also, did you know that? Do you know who wrote the soundtrack to it? Beck.
Danny Elfman.
Beck. Originally, the entire thing was a concept album by Beck, and then they didn't think it was very. Like, they didn't like it. And then they brought in Danny Elfman. And eventually they had to reach a negotiation where Beck and Danny Elfman were agreed that they would put their names on it, but Danny Elfman got the soundtrack to it, like, as credited, and Beck took his name off it. It was all very weird.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's why the music sounds weird. In that trailer, you're watching it, you're like, oh, that's kind of like a little bit more rock and roll. We've got We Will Rock You, which does not appear in the film. And then there's kind of a bit of rock stuff and a bit of Beck music, and they released a single that he wrote for the film.
Okay.
Dude, it's wild.
It's a bold choice to, A, have Beck doing your sort of concept album sort of thing for your very weird film, but then to also throw in a bit of Jack Black in there because he is physically incapable of not singing in his movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then with all of that, you know, thrown into the pot, you know, boiling away of frijoles, then you also throw on just like the crushed of Danny Elfman on top.
Exactly.
And the weird thing about it, Danny Elfman's not for the first time perhaps ever.
Yeah.
Now, we're talking about a lot, but I feel like in case you didn't understand what Nacho Libre is... I think we need a synopsis.
Free the nacho.
And I mean, I'm putting it out there to the chat. Hello, chat. Like, yes, I know you're all there. I mean, but I'm just going to say to this chat. One. I'm just going to say to this one, Quinny. There are no wrong accents. Like,
Peter's eyebrows just went into a new level.
If you have seen Nacho Libre, you can't do a wrong accent if this is the context.
I mean, you're right. I can't do anything more offensively stereotypically Mexican.
Exactly. I mean, they've done the hard work.
Fuck, I can try.
I mean, I don't want you to. I just want you to know.
I just love that both Beck's and Peter's eyes went, oh, no. Beck, fucking Jill. Sorry, yeah, because we were talking about Beck before.
Also, do we need to remind you that one of your D&D characters literally had that accent?
He was Spanish and he was a dragonborn. They can have any accent they fucking want.
Okay.
I mean, I can't.
He wasn't wearing a fucking sombrero.
I don't remember Jack Black wearing one either.
Oof. No, that's a way deeper cut.
Yeah. That's when my question is, like, is the little moustache that Jack Black is sporting through this, is that kind of Mexican facing? Like, you know, black face or brown face, but in this case, Mexican face?
I can't answer that question. I can.
As there being no Mexican person in this chat, I think that's going to be difficult to answer.
This is true.
Sure. I'm going to say, use your own judgment there, Quinny. But all I'm saying is, compared to the film, there's no wrong accents.
Okay. Well, chat, where are we at? Like,
the best one we've got so far is wrestler announcer, but with an accent, not specifying any. Type. Not saying
any accent you like.
Pick an accent, Quinny.
Maybe punch up.
Also, hang on, when we do like Russian accents and stuff like that,
yep.
How come we do those?
Because we're white Caucasian based.
Oh, okay.
I guess.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and I mean, are we ever, I don't know. I guess it's because they are Boris and Natasha. It's like cartoon character as opposed to larger cultural stereotype, maybe?
You could try, because that is the credited actor who is in the film, a Peter Stormare accent.
Fuck, you're on.
And all I've got for you is probably the same rock intro from last week. Anyway, what's the film back, Winnie?
I am the world famous actor Peter Stormare. That's all I've got. Ignacio Jack Black, or Nacho to his friends, works as a cook in it's gone Mexican. I didn't fucking mean it to go Mexican, but it's Peter Stormare. I'm trying to think of him okay. from work.
Try just go Swedish chef. just take it to a whole different plane and then you won't drift.
Ignacio or Nacho to his friend works as a cook in the Mexican monastery where he grew up. Bork, bork. The monastery is home to a bunch of orphans whom Nacho cares for very deeply. But there is not much money to feed them properly. Nacho decides to raise money for the children by moonlighting as Lucha Libre wrestler with his partner Escolito. That is played by Hector Jimenez. I'm not going to attempt that with an accent. But since the church forbids Lucha, Nacho must disguise his identity. Fork.
Well, that just absolutely set fire to our entire Nordic audience.
It was Nordic head. I love it. Thank you, Chad. Amazing. Perfect.
Jesus. Great. I mean, we have managed to avoid some of that, but that's okay. This movie does enough of the heavy lifting for us.
I love that. Just try punching up, please.
Look,
the Swedes are fine, okay? They're fine.
Yeah, they're fine. They've got enough money.
They're doing fine.
If I could have done Finnish, I would have, because they seem to be even more chilled than the Swedes.
You can just punch at the Swiss. What are they going to do? Hoard more gold?
They'll just open up one of their parts of their knife and attack me with
it. Right. Very slowly from a tiny thing.
Yeah.
Okay, hang on.
Essentially, Jack Black is a guy who works in a monastery and he goes doing Lucha Libre wrestling at night, but he meets a beautiful new, nurse, no.
Nun.
The other sexy outfit, Quinny.
Yeah, oh, sorry. Sorry, I was getting my sexy, slutty outfits confused in my head. Yeah. Damn it.
I think it's called Sexy Nun and Slutty Monk. That's Sophie Monk.
Hey, she seems like a lovely person.
Okay. Question that I have.
I'm sorry. I just want to say that Adsky just gifted us here one sub to the Swedish chef. Great. I don't know when Swedish chef came in.
Great. You called him with the song of his people.
Well done, Adsky.
Thanks.
Well done, sir.
Excellent. So, okay, how do we get here? How do we get to Nacho Libre? Quick history lesson. So you've got that film Napoleon Dynamite, which was a wonderfully weird and quirky look at flyover state America, trying to do a bit of a fly on the wall comedy that was a breakout hit for Jared Hess. And then you have this thing. So you've gone from Napoleon Dynamite to straight after making Nacho Libre. And it feels, did it feel a little bit rinse repeat attempt to you guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
It definitely had the same indie vibes as Napoleon Dynamite, but they were obviously needed a bit more money. So they needed to put a bit more of a higher profile in the lead, because I feel like they probably could have made this movie with a Mexican lead actor and it be quirky and fun and weird like Napoleon Dynamite, but to get that commercial attraction and get it on bigger screens, I think somebody said, get Jack Black.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this is one of the things that I found from doing this is like, I didn't understand that Jared Hess has been punching out a movie every couple of years.
Oh.
And I did not know that. Okay. Because it was Napoleon Dynamite, then Nacho Libre, then Gentleman Broncos, then Don Verdeen, then Mastermind, then Thelma the Unicorn, and most recently, a Minecraft movie.
Oh, shit.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Remember? Okay. And then the untitled Minecraft sequel, which is coming out. So you just, like, there's one of these things like, oh, whatever happened to Jared Hess? He's been working.
Right. He's been fine.
He's been doing things.
Okay, what's everybody's thoughts on Napoleon Dynamite? Like,
I love it.
You love Napoleon Dynamite?
I do.
Lovely. Yeah. Pete?
Yeah, it's been a while, but I remember liking it at the time.
Yeah. It was a fun sort of take on Americana. You know, it's, and I like a small movie about a small thing, you know, they were just regular kind of quirky comedy thing. It was fine. And then this one did not feel like that.
I remember the fewer fart jokes in Napoleon Dynamite.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
But if you look at it, like, there is, like, if you go through a lot of Jared Hess's movies, it's not very highbrow when you're getting in there. They're definitely throwing those ones from the sideline. Yeah.
I personally, when I first watched Napoleon Dynamite, hated it with a fucking passion. The way that it was shot, the weird pacing, I don't know, there was something about it that felt so aggressively fucking quirky that it annoyed me and I got really angry at it. Over the years, I have chilled out a bit on it and come to kind of like its particular weird vibe and it's, you know, and its ridiculous quotability and everything. Mm-hmm. But I did not enjoy it when I first saw it. And this one gave me a lot of the same. So if you're a Napoleon Dynamite fan, okay, great. If you're not like me, this is going to serve you up a whole bunch of like, don't like.
I mean, you know, look at, here's the problem. I was trying to remind myself constantly. I'm like, this was made 20 years ago. It was made 20 years ago. It was made 20 years ago. Like, and that's actually a bad thing because a film that is made well, that is enjoyable, transcends time periods, I feel. And this one, I think, is very much stuck in 2005 when it was made and refuses to let go.
A vice-like grip.
Yes, a vice-like grip. In there. But I have to, like, if I'm going to say kind things about Nacho Libre, the stunting on it was quite good. Like, I thought the stunting and some of the wrestling stuff and how they did it, and especially when they interacted with other obviously professional stunt people and wrestlers in the rings, at times I was like, oh, that was really good, actually. Like, that was a good move, yeah. Or that was a good flip, or that was a good kind of piece. And then the rest of it is just like a house of straw where you're like, oh, God, do not put any weight on any of the rest of this because it's absolutely, oh, that, why is that guy getting shit smeared in his face?
Yeah, that's a very, very good question.
What does that serve? Who does that serve? Who laughed then?
I like Predicator. This didn't rub me the wrong way. It just made me think, oh, okay. Yes, Predicator.
Yeah. Oh. Yes. Uncomfortable, but not understanding how to express that.
Hey, I feel like you've got a lot that you want to say about this.
Well, I mean, I think it's all fairly obvious why I wouldn't enjoy this film.
Go on, lay it out for the people who haven't seen it. Give them a reason.
I watched a bit of it, and then I was like, oh, I've like watched an hour of this. I'll just watch the last half hour, like on Tuesday before the stream. And then I looked at it this morning, and I'd only watched 20 minutes of it, and it really felt like I'd watched an hour. I knew it wasn't for me at the time, and then like 20 years of progress. Well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Relative progress later, it's a hard no for me.
Sure.
Just, just, yeah, I mean, I can certainly appreciate some things about it. Like the colours were pretty. The performances, for what they were you know, good. I don't think that you'd cast a white dude in that role now, but I couldn't find a lot of general upset online about that, so I'm not going to make a huge deal of that, not, as Jill mentioned before, being Mexican. I felt like it was just like many other films that we've seen of the era, the entire thing is just like a 90-minute long fat joke, which is where the fart jokes kind of pissed me off, because we don't make those jokes about skinny people. Like, it's just a very obvious, like, one-track joke the entire way through, and I never think that joke is funny ever. So it just makes it hard to like a film. I feel like the plot and the structure and the characters coming together in an entirely different context, I possibly would have liked. But just that, you know, 2005 when it was made, context, and also coming from the reign of somebody who has clearly very different comedic tastes to me, made it not for me. It's not a me film. I did watch the wrestling scenes because I understand that that's what we're here for, and and I think a conversation about how that particular style of wrestling is different to the style of wrestling that we have been discussing for the rest of the month is more interesting to me than a critique of the film.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate that you watched the wrestling scenes.
Yeah, I wish that we'd had a few more of them, to be honest.
That's what I'm here for.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Like, there's one or two sort of, you know, big wrestling moments, and there is one with the two short statured actors who, you know, that's a really fun wrestling sequence. Like, that one goes pretty hard and is also very much in keeping with luchador style wrestling. What I wanted a little bit more of the high flying shit. I wanted like this one never really hits that proper luchador, like everything swinging, flying, flipping all over the place stuff.
I was like,
come on, if you're calling yourself this, if you're doing lucha libre, then fucking do lucha libre. I was a bit disappointed by that.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm glad that they did put Mini Estrella in. That's the name of the small statured wrestlers. They have whole division in Lucha Libre just called Mini Estrella. And it's not just people with dwarfism, but it's also they have a height requirement of 5 feet, I believe, 5 feet and under. So even just like short people can fight in Mini Estrella. And they're really highly regarded. And one of the mini wrestlers in this film is actually a guy called, I'm trying to remember his name. Fire out. Mascarita Dorada. And he is a bull masked wrestler. And so he played one of the guys in that tag team.
And, right, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think I found a clip that had him in there, and I was like, oh yeah, this is
Dion
related.
Found a clip today of some Lucha Libre, and the guy that was wrestling was Mascarito Sagrada.
Yeah.
And he is 60 years old, still wrestles in Lucha Libre style. And he has had a few namesakes that have taken on the Mascarito Sagrada name, one of them being Mascarito Dorada. And, it's quite cool.
Look, one of those things that I find it's, lacking in the film a little bit is the understanding that the Lucha Libre competition is, highly acrobatic. Mm. Like, I feel like the taste of the American one we got was... you know, it's a soap opera. They're doing it for the show, and the wrestling is definitely part of it, but not really. That it's more the soap opera kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was watching bits and pieces of Lucha Libre wrestling, I was like, this stuff is just bonkers. Like, yeah. it's like wushu as compared to karate, you know? You're kind of like, holy shit, they're doing the big thing and all of this and doing that. So when, you know, I was watching Nacho Libre, I was just kind of like, oh, this could be a great opportunity to showcase. Oh, okay. Nope, it's just a Jack Black vehicle, but set in a different country, and they're doing it pretty badly. Oh, dear. You know, these people are not, like, they're supposed to be quirky, but you're making them out to be bad, or you're like point and laugh, not kind of the thing they are doing is funny. It's the look at this weirdo funny.
Yeah, I think it really had moments. I found parts of the story very charming. And like I said at the top of the show, it is loosely based on a true story of a friar from a church that did take up Lucha Libre to pay for food at the church. His wrestling name was Fray Tormenta, which is like the Friar Storm. And he even had a role in the film. The guy was in the film. He was playing a retired wrestler in the movie. So he's still, well, actually, this movie was made 20 years ago. I couldn't tell you if he's actually still alive. But yeah, maybe not.
No, probably not. Considering the guy who played Ramses is unfortunately passed away. So
yeah, but he was only 51 when he died.
That's a good point.
Which is unfortunate. And I'll tell you more about him later. But yeah, I thought at its core there was a really charming story to be told about, you know, somebody trying to help lift up like these poor children that have nothing, and so he does it the only way that he can, like to make money in his small village. And I thought there was some fun scenes in the movie as well. Like I really adored the scenes with the children. I thought they were fantastic. And I liked the party scene towards the end where you kind of get to see a bit more of like the highfalutin Lucha Libre world and how adored these masked wrestlers are, and just to kind of get a bit of perspective on what the culture is like.
It was that thing, like at the heart of it, Nacho Libre is a fun story. It was just in the wrapping that perhaps wasn't as handled by a different director, it might have made a different film. And this one felt kind of like a bit paint by numbers. Like, you did Napoleon Dynamite. That made us a lot of money. Now we're going to do this one too. It will make us a lot of money. And, you know, when it came out, everyone was like, oh, still made a lot of money. Which is very weird, but also very interesting. Do we know who wrote this one or co-wrote it?
Jared Hess's wife.
No. Try again.
Well, yes.
But try again. Other writer.
Okay.
Very popular writer right at the moment, like hugely worldwide popular, like showrunner writer of things. Also did School of Rock. That's Mark White, who did the White Lotus.
Oh,
so like this is one of those interesting things. Like one of the people who wrote this is Mark White, who's just currently enjoying a whole bunch of success for doing the White Lotus.
Are you saying Mark or Mike?
Mike White.
Yes.
Mike White, sorry.
I thought you said Mark, and I was like,
I probably did. Yeah.
So here's a weird little thing that, sorry, Jill, I know we've been talking over this a lot, and I know that this is one of your choices. It's WrestleTober. It's
my new special interest.
Yeah. Did you enjoy yourself with this one? Because I was about to go on a rant about something, and I realized I think it's important that we have, you know, some balance, you know.
Besides its obvious flaws, yes, I did enjoy the movie.
Okay. But any particular parts that you really liked or?
I just liked the relationships between the characters. I think, like, what Ignacio, how he treated his friend, Steve, what was it?
Steve Skeleton.
was like a bit rough. Like he really kind of took this dude off the street and treated him like shit just so he could, you know, get popular.
Not very monk-like.
No, but I mean, I enjoyed getting to see like a perspective. Well, getting to see, get, God, what am I trying to say? A movie showing people a different culture. I mean, it was probably not under the correct lens, but it was nice to see a movie that about, you know, Lucha Libre that kind of made it onto bigger screens.
Hopefully it introduced some more people to the world of what's
And I
this
mean, yeah,
masked wrestler thing going on.
I enjoyed the core of the story, but I do wish that maybe it had come across in a different vehicle.
Well, I mean, it has been 20 years, right, for a remake.
Or even just a new take on Lucha Libre.
Which I would love to see like a Lucha Libre film that is, you know, really more energetic and more kind of, but also coming from that background of Mexico. Because, I mean, the thing that, okay, my issue with it is you've got Jarrod Hess and Jerusha Hess, who are both Middle Western Mormons, who are writing, you know, a story about Catholic Mexicans. You're casting Jack Black as a Mexican and or half Mexican or whatever. And then I couldn't help but feel like every other character was kind of there just for the color and shape of them, not for any real character. Like it's just like Esqueleton is tall, thin, goofy Mexican guy, but now we've got other old blind Mexican guy and small fat Mexican child, and like I wasn't getting characters, I was just getting a whole bunch of caricatures. And
True.
even though it's shot in Oaxaca, which is a beautiful part of Mexico, I felt like we weren't even necessarily seeing that much of the beauty of the place. So I don't know, it felt like a weird kind of tour being run by somebody who didn't know the actual culture.
Yeah, fair enough.
And that was kind of my problem with it. Like it just felt super, super culturally appropriative.
Yeah, I don't feel like much of the writing team or the crew ate a lot of food from the local area during this. I feel like there were a lot of burgers and fries maybe flown in from California. That's the feeling I got too. I was like, ugh. I mean,
I mean, there's a lot of weird shit in it. Like, I didn't
they
even understand the farting.
I don't know why. What was that about?
There was never really an explanation
And if
about
you're gonna do a
that.
training montage, what the fuck is it? Why is throwing a hornet's nest at someone part of luchador training?
Yeah, I mean,
It's
that just
not.
felt like the weird Napoleon Dynamite stuff to me. But then there was like, you know, oh, he finally has money to give everyone better food. Why are they eating salad?
Well, if all you've been eating up until now is brown beans and old, yeah, maybe if a salad does sound like a fresh, lovely change of pace, but yeah,
Yeah,
it
but
did.
salad doesn't fill you up.
No. As The Simpsons taught us, you do not make friends with salad.
I mean, there's weird choices in there, that's for sure.
Like and the thing about Peter Stormare, you know, the accent that cannot be spoken of ever again. Like he's literally in there for a single scene where it's like you must climb to the top of a cliff and then you will get magical eagle powers if you do the thing, and you're like, what?
I mean, that was a weird thing. Like, how come all of a sudden it started to go like mystical?
And there's this running, that's the other thing that kind of bugged me a little bit. There's a running joke all the way through it that Steve Esquelito is an atheist and has only believes in science and stuff like that. And then by the end of it, there's like, oh, well, we should pray so that we can finish this match. And I was like, okay.
Well, they are Mormons, Quinny. Let's be honest.
But then you have gorgeous, heartwarming things where he finally was able to buy a bus for the kids and then he could take them to the pyramid relics and stuff
As
and
long as he has an outfit to just like I, there is a wonderful stupid weirdness of Jack Black's character that is like, I got that when he got dressed up because he got some money. So he bought, the first thing he bought was completely useless shoes. And then his outfits, like, I kind of got that. It was sweet, but I feel like it wasn't really working. It didn't mesh with it, you know. Jack Black was too much of a powerhouse for this, and it felt like he was reining himself in a bit.
Yeah.
Because it was a bit unsure of whether or not he should be doing it. I felt like half a whole way through I was watching him do the accent, and I could sort of feel him screaming underneath going, should I be doing this? Because the entire crew and cast out here is probably Mexican.
Yeah.
And I'm giving it a shitty accent.
That, but also, like, I feel like there is a fundamental imbalance between the filmmaker and that, his performance style. Like, you look at Napoleon Dynamite and you can hear that voice through half of Jack Black's lines, you know, where he's talking to the girl and he's like, so whatever you, you know, I don't know. And it's sort of that feigned coolness or whatever. And then every now and then there'll be just this moment of Jack Black gurning and being like, yes, now I get to do the Jack Black thing. And then it'll
yeah.
go. Yeah. And I was like, oh, fuck, this is just uncomfortable because I couldn't find where it was. The other thing that really bugged me. Sorry.
Sure. It's a lot of things that are really bugging you about.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you, Jill. I really didn't enjoy myself. I didn't enjoy myself at all.
It's true. He was whinging to me about having to watch it.
No, not having to watch it. It was just like...
Well, when you were watching it, kind of.
Yeah,
watching
I was like,
a bit of
oh,
it. And you're like, oh, God.
Were you doing a me-style running commentary of all the things you found ridiculous?
Well, I was in the office at work, so a little bit. The one point with Esquelito and being chased by the large lady.
Oh, it's a fat joke inside a fat joke. You know, yeah. I love like Russian dolls of fat jokes as well. It's amazing. Mm.
Incidentally, the character's name is Candida, and that's, you know.
It was a different time, Peter.
I mean, it was. I just looked it up. It was Shallow Hal was released in 2001, so it was only really like being made 4 years after that. And that didn't bomb as far as I remember. Hey, look, like, everyone watched that movie like it was a movie that we were all going to watch and didn't really have a lot of discussions about how deeply disgusting it was.
Yeah. 20 years ago, after. Me Too hadn't fixed Hollywood.
It was off the back of Heroin Chic. It was, you know, it was a different time in terms of, oh, I don't think we've improved that much, but I do think that we've come a little way of how we treat people's bodies or treat, you know, characters as entities in themselves, regardless of what their body is like, rather than just boxing people into caricatures like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was like that was... an era for that.
Because we've taken some baby steps since then, does it feel like watching this was a bit of too much of a whiplash to go back and be like, oh, no, we've moved from there?
I mean, I don't – well, in that respect, we're still seeing similar things. Mm. I don't think that we're seeing it at quite the same brazen blockbuster, this is the thing about this movie that's funny level. But I think that we've come far enough that I don't know if I would have been able to articulate what made me uncomfortable about it at the time. And now I'm like, this is exactly what makes me uncomfortable about this.
I could give you a dot point and a PowerPoint presentation of the things that make me uncomfortable.
Because I give zero shits about Jack Black's physique in the film. Like, wrestlers come in all shapes and sizes. But just making that the butt of the joke the entire time, like, undermines... the entire film.
I actually quite like that I looked completely past that idea of, like, isn't it funny that Jack Black's in this outfit? Because I felt at least his personality through it, just I didn't think about it. I wasn't there going, he looks ridiculous.
No. Yeah,
I was like, oh no, I get this. He's doing something because he believes it inside.
Yeah, I may be oversensitive to it because I feel so strongly about that.
Oh no.
Yeah, well, I wonder if 20 years ago it was supposed to be funny because he was fat, but now it's just like that's of no consequence.
Yeah. Look, if you took the fart jokes out, then it would have been more borderline.
Also, I found that sort of strange that people were calling, like, we refer as like, oh, he's fat. And I'm like, wait, when they're standing next to each other, it's like a skinny person and a regular person.
That is the other thing. How we define fat is also weird.
How is Jack Black playing this off? Why are they making him say, oh, look at this funny...
But that's the thing, like putting him in costumes that are like...
extenuating.
I don't even think Jack Black was obviously too heaviest small in that movie.
Exactly. And that's like, supposed to accentuate it for comedic purposes.
He was 36.
God.
Like, you know, he's much older now.
I didn't look that good at 36.
Well, that's the thing. Like, it's not like, I would have, like, bought him 100% as a wrestler in that context without that running joke. And enjoyed the film more.
I mean, there's plenty of wrestlers with his build right now.
Yeah, exactly.
100%. Like, you want to be solid. You're picking people up. Like,
I got friends in Launceston who I was, you know, they do their wrestling down there, and they're especially in those smaller things. You got wrestlers of all shapes and sizes, and it's whoever can take a fall, whoever can deliver a big hit and can sell it. That's all that matters. And this one also doesn't have that what is the kayfabe that you're talking about of showing behind the curtain at all. As far as this one's concerned, no, it's straight just up
fighting.
You know, there's no planning, there's no showmanship or anything.
Exactly.
I respect that as a storytelling choice. If I wasn't already just pissed off because of progress, because I did kind of think about that, and I feel like I respect that as a storytelling choice because it feels like you're kind of like telling the fantasy in this one. Like it feels like a storybook. It feels like you know, it's not supposed to be a film about real world wrestling. It's supposed to be the fantasy about this legend Nacho Libre, and as a choice, you know, not being a film about the real world of wrestling, but you know, having being a film inside the storytelling of wrestling, then that completely makes sense to me.
Yeah. So interestingly, I'm just looking up a little bit of how it was received at the time, and we're all kind of looking at it through 19 years later lenses and stuff like that. So how was it received at the time? Not well. approval rating of 39% for most people, average rating of 5.1 out of 10, and a lot of comments along the lines of at times hilarious, but other times extremely offensive.
I mean, like, I don't know. I kind of want to see the sequel.
Which
they had talked about that it didn't actually get made, which would have featured, and this is where it could have tied up very nicely, Nacho going to Japan to wrestle. See?
I would have watched that.
You know? And like,
yeah, but can you imagine all the fat jokes about the sumos?
Oh, God.
Yeah.
And could you imagine the amount of cultural fucking stereotyping that we would get there? Especially like when we got to the end of one of the big fights in this, where there's, you know, literally a wrestler called Chino, the China man, who did karate stuff. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
There's also the
black guy.
He's a playable character on the Nintendo DS Nacho Libre tie-in game. You can play up to 20 wrestlers from the film.
The African-American wrestler who... does a bit of a dance and then like kick somebody in the balls by doing the splits. And I was like, oh dear.
Let's tell you about the guy that played Ramses.
Please do.
Sure.
His wrestling name is Silver King, and he comes from a big dynasty of luchadors. His father is Dr. Wagner, and he unfortunately died of a heart attack in 2019. I think he was only 51, which is very unfortunate. but his brother currently still wrestles. He's Dr. Wagner Jr. And then his nephew is El Hijo del Dr. Wagner Jr., which is the son of Dr. Wagner Jr.
Excellent.
I highly recommend checking out the AAA YouTube page and watching some actual legit Lucha Libre because it's really cool shit.
We will put some in the post. If you go to the website, we will make sure that we put some stuff in the post because we can talk about it all we want, but you really do have to see Lucha Libre at its best. Yes. Sorry, I just wanted to point out the wrestler I was talking about is a guy, is a character called El Snowflake. And his character was a 1970s blaxploitation street pimp.
It was played by an actual real
human tornado.
Yes, and I also too heard that Predator Kangaroo pointed out in the chat there was a move called El Swastika, and we're not going to ask what that was. And they didn't do it in the film.
No.
But that the mini Estrella I was talking about before, Mascarito Sagrada, when he first debuted, I was telling you guys about this before, but I want to tell the chat. When he first debuted, which was like when his ring debut was, I'm not sure. His tag team partner, he was called Pescuelo Luki, which means like little Luke, and his tag team partner's name was Arturito, which is Artur teacher, so they went full Star Wars shtick for his debut.
You mean little Arthur?
Arturito.
Arturito is little
Arturico, Pasquale Lucchi.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
I love it. It's great, and I won't gonk you for that because it's sweet.
thank you, Predakenga, for doing the looking up for us about El Swastika.
We don't need to go.
We don't need to go because
everyone has Google for now. So you can do your own. You can clear your own search history. I'm not doing that for you. should we just go and see a clip, see a last little taste of it, and then wash our mouths out and discuss something else?
Yeah,
there's no ratings on this one again because you know I'm just going to come back with that. I do not recommend.
But sister, they are just niños trying to release their wiggles.
Ignacio, they are wrestling in a sacred place.
Okay, orphans, listen to me. Listen to Ignacio. I know it is fun to wrestle. A nice pile drive to the face, or a punch to the face. But you cannot do it, because it is in the Bible not to wrestle your neighbor.
So you've never wrestled?
Me? No, come on. Don't be crazy. Listen, I know the wrestlers get all the fancy ladies and the clothes and the free creams and lotions. But my life is good. Really good. I get to wake up every morning at 5 a.m. and make some soup. It's the best. I love it. I get to lay in a bed by myself all of my life. It's fantastic.
That's a little taste into Nacho Libre's life.
And if we're inspired to go and actually look at some proper Mexican wrestling outside the movie, where are we going to go?
AAA YouTube channel.
Alrighty.
There's a lot.
Just much like, you know, Bollywood films, there is a lot of different options.
There's a dude in Lucha Libre right now called Mr. Iguana, and his whole thing is he dresses like an iguana, and he has a puppet iguana called La Yesca, and she fucking attacks people too.
Amazing.
See? Yeah.
How is that not fun? That's selling it for me. I'll go and watch some Lucha Libre.
Yeah.
For hell of it.
And my God, sorry, I just went looking and there's so much of it.
Yeah. Like, if there's one successful thing about like watching Nacho Libre is I'm more interested in seeing the actual Lucha Libre because it looks kind of fun, and probably going to Oaxaca or to Mexico out on holiday because it looks lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And probably avoiding most of what Jack Black's on in the cinema. But that's a different story.
There's also, I've just got to find the name of the cartoon. There's a very popular cartoon called Mucha Lucha, which is a kid's cartoon, which is all about Lucha Libre. And Los Campeones de la Lucha Libre. There's a lot. El Tigre, The Adventures of Manny Rivera. There's a bunch of stuff out there for kids and stuff who want to get into the whole Mucha Lucha kind of stuff. If you enjoy the look of it, there's also a bunch of other animated series and stuff around. There's Maya and the Three, which is a beautiful animated series that's all Mexican based.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There's lots of things to go out there and look for. And if that's going to be the ultimate goal of WrestleTober, I feel like Jill has succeeded.
Yay!
On doing that. Look, we've provided you emotional support there, or emotional disruption, Peter. Quinny, we've given you as many options as we can to redeem yourself, but you still dug yourself a grave in all of these accents and completely isolated our Nordic audience today as well. So,
they're fine.
And I am interested in seeing other versions of a sport that I didn't really consider was a sport. I was a little bit on the side
sports
of the...
Sports entertainment.
Yeah, sports entertainment. And I got to say, some of those things, like, I just kind of watch it. I want to see a supercut version of just great acrobatic stuff that comes out of the wrestling. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty good. Yeah. Do I want to get it on the behind the scenes? No, not really.
Got a comment also from Predakanga saying, highly recommend the Guacamelee video games. Two D Metroidvania that's crossed between Lucha Libre and Dia de los Muertos, which is a fantastic combination.
That's cool.
The Lucha Libre stuff was always very close to BDSM in my mind for some reason because of the
Gimp mask.
Yeah, Gimp mask kind of thing, you know. And I was just always a little bit like, oh, I don't know, why are they wearing a mask? You know, what are they hiding?
The Gimp's sleeping, man. Well, I guess you better go wake him up. He's got to wrestle.
And you go and see like Kane and other stuff from the American. You're like, oh, of course they're wearing a mask.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
It's all strange. It's the mystique of it all.
Yes, it is. Speaking of mystiques, we did get a question that Adski asked in the chat, which was...
which is something you can do at any point in time if you want. You can ask a question and we will answer
that. He has asked the one which movie trope or trend which we wish would end. Mine is the reliance on the fact that some woman or person has to die in order for the male protagonist to do something. I mean,
are you trying to end fridging?
Kind of, yeah. I don't want to, like, just because some person dies like that, it's always like, oh, my wife died, oh, my girlfriend died, oh, my mother died, oh, all these things, it's caused me to go on this thing. I'm like,
yeah,
okay.
But I watched that latest Rami Malek film, The Amateur, a couple of months ago, and literally first 10 minutes fridged.
Yeah.
Whole reason for his journey in that film is because somebody murdered his wife, and I'm like,
or,
come on.
And adjacent to that, though, the trope of having a woman in bed sheets that's kind of like, you know, always lying down watching while a bed sheet is being pulled off. That says there's a third person in the room pulling the bed sheets up.
Do you know what was more offensive about that wife that was murdered? It was fucking Rachel Brosnahan. Why would you kill Rachel Brosnahan in your movie?
Not Lois Lane.
Couldn't be so much better.
Yeah.
I'm a bit like you, Dion. I hate nothing I hate more than the shot where somebody's lying in bed and they're looking across at their beautiful partner or whatever, and the sheets over them both, and they're just looking at each other, and it's soft lighting and stuff like that, and you know that she's dead. Because she's always fucking dead.
Not in the scene, Jill. Not in the scene. It's a flashback.
It's a flashback. It's always a flashback.
Oh! You just look so horrified.
Wow, you're really destroying my Baz Luhrmann and Romeo and Juliet thing right now.
Well, I mean, it works out there too. Eventually she's dead. Sorry, spoilers.
You mean you hate the flashback of under the sheets when the person is dead?
Yeah. I hate that. Gotcha. I mean, it's like, yeah, I just.
But
think
it's always followed by a flashback of her smiling into the camera, walking down an idyllic beach and holding.
Yes, and a lens flares, yeah. So you can't see their face.
Yeah. Laughing like you've just told a wonderful joke.
Yeah, yes. They're eating a salad.
It's actually like a really like good portrait of what I like men expect out of a relationship with women, yeah. But just those moments.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Laughing at me like I'm hilarious, being in bed with me, always smiling.
Sure.
Yep.
Not like, you know, and also perfectly made up and looking gorgeous and wonderful, having just woken up.
Okay. Adsky has said that his is interconnected universes. Marvel will never see the high of the Avengers arc, and Warner Brothers can't seem to get it right. Just get back to making good movies. Like I'm, to be honest, there's still parts of the Marvel and DC universes I'm enjoying, so I'm not gonna bitch about that.
I am over sequels. I'm over sequels for fucking anything.
Oh. Yeah.
Last month we had Black Phone 2. You didn't need a second one. That first movie was fine on its own, and it was actually quite good and very self-contained. You did not need to make another one.
Yeah. But people will always make sequels if there was money.
Yeah, I'm over sequels. Mm-hmm. Okay. The whole Disney slate that was announced at D23 this year was sequels.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
There wasn't one original film. I watched Moana 2. It sucked.
Yeah, it was pretty fucking lame, wasn't it?
I totally forgot about Moana 2. I haven't seen that yet.
And well, let me tell you, it was a TV show.
We're getting a fucking live action now.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, actually, that's one that I'm more than happy to fucking die in a fire.
live action
translations of animated things. Mm-hmm. As a younger man, I would have been right into that. I loved, especially if it was a live action translation of an anime or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I was like, fuck yeah, I want to check that out.
You loved that Dragon Ball Z movie, didn't you? Sicko.
There was never a Dragon Ball Z live action movie, Jill. I don't know what you're talking about.
I will never watch the How to Train Your Dragon live action because they already did it.
They really did.
It was an animated film.
Yeah.
Also, wait, where was I going with that? I just lost it. Did fuck.
Is fuck. It like?
That's it. The people that created K-pop Demon Hunters have vowed that they will not allow a live action remake to occur.
That's good. Did we get a trope from Peter? Did you have a trope that you want to see?
Oh, I think I've made it pretty clear. in this chat, what trope I wish would die?
Sure.
Body a horrible, horrible death. But if I need to pick another one, a lighter one perhaps. Ridiculously transparently useless makeovers.
Let me just take your glasses off.
Beautiful. And like, actually, the trailer that we watched earlier for the new Elizabeth Moss film looks like it's going to shit me off in that respect.
The she's all that trope.
Yeah, the she's all that trope. Like, we put a bit of makeup on her and took her glasses off, and she's a whole new person, and now we all think she's hot.
Yeah, like that Elizabeth Moss trailer, like, she doesn't look any different to what she did in the
before. She just put some makeup on and done her hair. She could have done it without. Anyway, maybe the movie makes more sense in the trailer.
Tangentially.
I don't know, but it's just giving like bad ripoff of substance.
Tangentially, just quickly, if anyone has the idea, can I posit a question in response to Adki? What is a trope that should come back to cinema?
Ooh.
I can start you off with one that I want right now. Where I would like to see more grizzled cops turning in their badge and telling their boss to get fucked and then going and committing literal crimes to catch the bad guy. That can come back.
Yeah,
that one can come back. I want to, just like, take my badge, you piece of shit. You know, get out of here. I quit, you know.
Yeah, I'm not
going to
play by the rules.
Exactly. Because I just want to see a modern policing department go, wow, do we have to arrest this person now?
I would love to see that. But like, you know, where they then become ICE or something like that. And then you realize that you've been rooting for an actual fucking prick.
True.
Like a terrible person.
You write that movie.
I'm gonna hand in my badge because I'm a man who can't play by the rules. Okay, well, we've got a job for you, and it turns out you're the new Gestapo.
And they've got to have one of your one-liners is no more Mr. Ice Guy.
Oh my god, I wish I hadn't taken a sip of water just then.
Podcast over.
You are dead to me. Oh. Actually, one thing that I would like to see a trope re-examined is, like Casper mentioned it briefly there, like the magical girl transformation. I would like, there's something I've seen a couple of times, the I guess it's magical girl.
Manic pixie dream girl?
A little bit, like there's manic pixie dream girl, but also manic superpowered magic pixie dream girl. Like I was really like enjoying Alien Earth, and there was something towards the end where I was just like, I don't know that I needed to have my lead character become magical, superpowered.
The manic pixie alien girl.
Yeah, like innocent, but at the same time dangerous.
That's a trope that might be specific to that one thing.
It is, but like you will see it, like you know, you've got River in.
That's true.
There is an ongoing trope of the superpowered, slightly weird.
Dark Willow.
Dark Willow, and it's
the quirky girl that can do everything.
Quirky girl can do everything, but is also portrayed as being innocent and almost naive, but then also deadly. And I'm like, I think we can write better than that.
Just stop giving robots Wi-Fi. Let's go back to fucking
Aliens, where you've got, you know, a woman like Sigourney Weaver who, you know, wouldn't get written today because she's just straight up badass all the way through. But relatable, but also human, but also emotionally, you know, complex.
Yeah. Do you know what they call those?
Women.
Women.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, she was supposed to be the annoying one because she kept wanting to follow protocols and play by the rules and protect
and look
people.
Where that got her alive.
Yeah. Yeah. Alive. Yeah, not without trying, like with many men things trying to stop her from being alive because of dumb things. Fucking hell.
Anyway, we could go on. Point is a thing. Yeah, that is true. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I would like, what's one of the ones I want to see, which is a horror movie, but play like every cast member in the horror movie is a smart realist who takes advice.
In a horror movie.
Yeah, we hear sounds coming from the basement. We are not going down there. Get some nails and wood, and we're going to nail this thing shut.
I would love to see a horror movie where everybody does the smartest thing, and then whatever it is still happens and fucks them up because it's a horror movie. But I want to see people like do everything they can that every normal, sensible person would do.
Yeah, and still die.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be great.
You know, I've found out that I'm being stalked by a thing. I'm going to go to the police. I'm going to put myself into protective custody. I'm going to be in a secure room that nobody can get into. Oh, look at that. The monster's still got me, you know?
Yeah.
Yes. So thank you for that question. Anything else that we want gone?
Gone or replaced?
Either or.
Nah. Look, I mean, you know, Hollywood will continue to Hollywood itself. They'll keep chasing the almighty dollar and make interesting decisions that facilitate that need.
I'd like to see.
I mean, I take more dream ballets, but, you know, that's a specific genre.
A little bit, yeah.
You mean dream ballets, like dreaming about being a ballerina?
Like in a lot of musicals, there's a dream ballet scene.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Not like
you want more of those? You more dream ballet?
I feel like everything would be improved by dream ballet.
Like Casper in the Barbie movie.
I'm not sure Black Swan was improved by the dream ballet.
I mean, it was.
Just like any kind of like random dance or musical sequence in the middle of a movie that is not a dance or musical movie.
Yeah, Barbie.
Like that can come back.
Yeah.
I feel like that like happened more in the 70s.
I was watching something recently that
had the Marvels that had an unexpected musical number.
Yeah, and I dug that. That was great.
Yeah.
Casper has said more underground fight clubs, and I was like,
more underground fight clubs earlier in the season. Just get it over and done with.
Make a TV show called Underground Fight Club.
Oh my God. I wish I could remember what I was talking about the other day, but I was literally talking to someone and they were like, oh, this show's gone off the rails. And I said, did they have an underground fight club? And they're like, yeah, they did. Like, I wish I could remember what it was.
God damn.
And look, anything like that is that's good. Oh, the thing that I wanted to talk about to return back. Speaking of movies and other stuff that's coming, I was really interested in seeing Begonia. Have you seen the ads for that? Like the Emma Stone one that was coming out?
That new, what's his name? The guy that did Pretty, what was that fucking movie called that I hated?
Poor Things?
Poor Things. And it's
that guy.
Speaking of superpowered winsome women that ingenues, but also
sexually provocative.
Yeah, all of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Promiscuous.
That's it. Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah. Fuck that guy.
But it was interesting because I saw it and I was like, oh, that looks interesting, and I decided to just try and figure out what it was more about. And Quinny, this might be a bit of trivia for you too that you agree. It is based on a Korean film that was one of the very first films that I reviewed when I was on a little podcast years and years ago called Cool Shot on the Tube.
Say it again. Say it loud. Say it proud.
Cool Shot on the Tube. But Quinny, do you remember the film? Can you think of a Korean film? Because
you posted it in the chat, but I now can't remember what it was. Was it like Suffer the Something Planet or
Save the Green Planet?
Jesus Christ, that's going back
exactly. And I was just kind of like, oh shit, Begonia was just a remake of a film like that was only came out 20 years ago. It's like, oh, speaking of remakes, you know,
God,
it is about time. I was like, how dare they remake Save the Green Planet? That's a much, oh wait, it's been 20 years. Yeah, sure, why not?
It's 22 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck.
But the worst thing about it is I have no interest in seeing Begonia now because I know the twist. Because I remember the twist.
I can't remember the film at all.
Great. You'll probably have a great time in Begonia and then be like, oh, yeah.
Well, possibly. I don't particularly like Yorgos Lanthimos either.
He makes pretty things.
Yeah, pretty, but annoying. So one thing that I did want to mention is something that a couple of us went to yesterday that is now out in the world and something that Jill would very much not like to have watched.
Oh.
And I'm guessing probably not Pete's cup of tea either.
Jill would have been fine.
You like a good scary thing, though.
No clowns.
No clowns.
No clowns.
No clowns.
In the first episode, no clowns. So zero we're talking
clowns.
About...
But clowns later.
Yeah.
Definite clown adjacent.
No clown.
Carnival adjacent, just not carnival present.
Not great for all your coulrophobics out there, but Welcome to Derry, is unfortunately not Derry Girls. Or,
no.
We caught the first episode of that and went to a whole event thing at the Hayden Orpheum, which was a beautiful cinema. The event that ran way too fucking long.
A couple of hours for a 45-minute TV episode.
Oof. Yep, an hour and a half, literally sitting in the cinema waiting for the thing to start. Yep, oh. Yep. It was like they were doing so many activations. There was so much room for activities. And we chose to watch the Scream version of it, which is the one that was somewhat more interactive. So there were actors in and around the audience who joined in on scary bits, and there was some quite clever lighting effects done. Actually, there was a moment quite early on where like it's snowing in the thing, and there was very well done lighting snow happening in the room, and I was like, "Shit, that's clever."
Yeah, they did a good thing. Like I respect their ability to pull a bit of the stuff that was going on in the film out into the cinema. So it didn't feel heavy-handed. It just felt like an addition to it. But also, you know, the TV show is really going for a bit of shock. It's trying to grab your attention and say, we're definitely going to do scary stuff. At least it didn't shy away from that. So I feel like fans will be satisfied from this. But I probably won't be watching it on a late night alone.
Yeah, there was enough in there that I was like, there's legitimately creepy shit in there.
Also, like, full horror. Like, let's be honest here. This isn't toned down for television. It is definitely like, oh, okay, right.
You know. So we're not selling either of you on that at all, are we?
I mean, I like horror, but I can't do with the clown.
I'll give you this, Jill. You can watch the first episode, and I can guarantee you there is zero clown.
Yeah, but like, is this an ongoing story over the season? Yeah. See, you can't do that. I can't watch one episode and then be like, oh, this is fantastic. Now I want to keep watching it, but there's a clown and I don't know when it's going to come.
Yeah, like, I feel like I just want to say you can watch the intro first 10, 15 minutes and see if it's to your taste, because there is quite a bit of horror in the first 10 minutes. I'm not going
to be able to watch the rest.
Yeah, I was going to say, I feel like to anyone who's not coulrophobic, great. Have a great time with it. If you are legitimately creeped out by clowns, don't watch it, because if you do get hooked into it, then you will have the problem of going, fuck, now I'm wanting to watch a show. And look, I'm not going to lie. By the end of the first episode, I was like, I want to know what happens now. Like, they've set up enough good storylines and enough interesting characters that
I'm fascinated. They actually, like, they left me the end of that episode. I was like, they made a decision. And they kind of alluded to it. And if they did, it was a bold fucking choice.
If I go back for the second episode
and they commit to what they kind of alluded to at the end of the first episode, I'll be like, that's a gutsy fucking move, guys.
Yeah.
Well done. Yeah. That's new in television.
We will discuss it at some point in time, yeah. I'm sure.
Anyway, you can watch it now. It's on HBO. It's out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Peter, just do it. Do it. You'll be fine.
Yeah, you can watch it wherever you want, if you want to. And yeah, also fairly easy to get at the moment is also The Long Walk, which is another Stephen King one that doesn't have any clowns in it. Or The Life of Chuck, which also doesn't have any clowns in it. Pete doesn't have any clowns in it, does it?
The Life of Chuck, no clowns in The Life of Chuck. Oh. But a really joyful dance sequence in the middle of it.
Yes, I do want to see this.
Dream Ballet's made me think of it again.
Yeah.
Nice. Anyone else watch anything good, or should we?
Speaking of which, of stuff that's coming out though, and kind of adjacent, when do we get to see Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein?
Ooh, I saw it last Friday.
Hey, nice.
Yeah.
Did you go and watch it in the cinema?
I did.
Nice.
Yeah.
Did you enjoy it?
I did enjoy it.
Excellent.
Of course, the production design, phenomenal, just fantastic. Fucking Oscar Isaac, chewing scenery like nobody's goddamn business. So bloody good. Mia Goth, beautiful, stunning character of Elizabeth, like just better than I think like even the book or the play ever did her justice. Like, great.
Nice.
Jacob Elordi, bizarrely good monster. Like, he wasn't entirely disfigured enough, so there's going to be a whole new genre of girls that are monster fuckers. So
Dion should tell you about the weird shit that he gets served up from Instagram.
My only complaint about Frankenstein is there's some weird music choices, but otherwise, great movie.
Okay.
Look, I mean, we've got November coming up. That's when it comes out on streaming, I think November 7th.
It's on November 7th on Netflix. Yeah. I believe the cinema run ended on Sunday. So if you can still find it on a cinema screen, please go and do it.
And a slight spoiler, but not really, because we need to talk about it next week anyway. What's happening in November? Well, we've got the first couple, I think, pretty much done, which is next week is Predator.
Badlands. So
Predator Badlands. That will be our first one on the Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be doing it on Wednesday because we're seeing the screening on Tuesday. And then we might as well do Frankenstein the week after.
Sounds good.
Happy days. Yep. Happy days. And then, yes,
let's see if we can get some Running Man in there.
I would love to. Just premiered, I think, here in Australia at South by Southwest.
Right.
They did a screening there, I believe. Can't be sure. We'll have to check it out.
You're telling the story, my friend.
That's why I'm not committing.
Yeah, fair enough. I believe they showed clips of it and they had a hookup with Edgar Wright, but I don't think showed the actual film.
And then fourth slot for November is Peter's choice because she had to go through all WrestleTober.
I'm going to be in Japan, so maybe I'll pick one in December.
Japanese wrestling?
Yeah!
I can heartily recommend Sumo Do, Sumo Don't as one of the most delightful. Have you ever seen it, Jill? It's fucking delightful.
Oh, yeah, I did watch Sumo Do, Sumo Don't. That's funny.
Yeah, it's a really, really lovely Japanese film about a little dude who decides he's going to try and do sumo.
That's cute.
Don't forget, though, too, because we haven't done it yet, but I haven't forgotten the thing that we agreed to, which is Peter's... what is it? Was it adjacent sequels or no?
Twin films.
Twin films.
Twin films.
And I haven't done a online Google form thing to submit
vote
on which one out of them because we haven't got the list together. But that will come in December. And yes, Wicked. Thank you, Casper.
Wicked's on the 20th, Casper.
I'm almost scared to watch it because my expectations are so high now.
No, I can easily. I can say that it's going to be Predators, and then it's going to be Frankenstein, and then what would we say the third one?
Wicked.
Running Man. Yeah.
And Wicked.
Then Wicked.
Nice.
Yeah.
There's also Zootopia 2 in there, which I'm quite keen for.
And also Now You See Me, the third one.
I don't want to see.
That's what it's
now
called.
I've never seen them.
Yeah.
What? You can't go through the trilogy.
They still haven't gone for Now You Don't. Like, I know, zero respect for that.
Yes, they did. Yeah. It's called Now You See Me, Now You Don't.
Is that the sequel?
That's the third one.
Oh, God.
See, they've got Now You See Me, Now You See Me 2, and Now You See Me, Now You Don't.
See, Jill, I see your lack of enthusiasm for Zootopia 2. The only reason that I'm excited or interested in that is because the first film was a... fucking incredible piece of undercover storytelling about radicalization and terrorism that in the face of cute bunnies and rabbits.
Yeah, but if you don't think the sequel is going to be overblanched slop, then you're
delusional.
I hope so, but I reckon that there's still some people there who have got enough of a spine to go, actually, let's see if we can say something with these cute bunnies and rabbits and shit.
Oh, the furries had something to say.
Yes, they did. I can't unsee some of the Google search results.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The rule 34.
This is why you get the thing served to you on Instagram, Dion.
No, it's not. It was, listen, don't.
Anyway.
I don't need to see more sexy clowns. Just there, like set it out there. Please, algorithm, stop it.
Everybody has a wonderful Halloween on Friday night.
Oh, yeah.
Go and carve a pumpkin.
Finally.
Go to a party or something.
Finally in Australia, we get to have the 31st on a day that people can do that kind of stuff, which is amazing. And yet everywhere I go, I see people advertising stuff going, yeah, we're having a Halloween party on November 1st.
Lame.
I'm like, that's it. That's not Halloween. Halloween is the 31st of October.
Yep.
But isn't it Dia de los Muertos? Isn't that the day after Halloween? Day of the Dead?
I don't know. I'm not Mexican.
Okay.
I would have to ask someone from the culture.
I'm looking it up right now.
The same way I'd be like, if I need to know what a Nordic trap was, I'd ask someone from Norway.
Yes. Dia de los Muertos is November 1st and 2nd to honor the recently deceased dead ones.
There you go. You can wear your candy stars on
Dion,
Saturday.
Dion, Pretty Kanga is doing your task for you and reminding you that you wanted to say something about a Nacho Libre remake.
Oh, I didn't mean about the Nacho Libre remake. I meant about remakes in general. And that's what I was talking about, that one which was Bugonia, which is the remake of Save the Green Planet.
I see. Thank you. So we have circled back.
Yes, I did.
You've done the task.
I appreciate it. I love it.
Thank you for doing Dion's task.
Love listening. Yes. Active listening. Well done. Star for you.
Very good work.
Goes up on the wall.
Wow.
Excellent. Okay.
Right. Well, thank you very much, everybody.
That's it. WrestleTober. Yay. Okay. Quick thing before we all finish. Which was the best wrestler out of WrestleTober?
Oh, the best film that we saw?
No, just the best wrestler. Which of the wrestlers? So, you know, put them all in a cage match. You've got Nacho Libre. You've got, from last
the
week.
Iron Claw, the
last remaining Iron Claw. The wrestler. And
the Erics, the Von Erics.
And
Randy Ram. What was his name?
Randy the Ram.
And Paige.
Yeah. Paige, and Paige, Randy the Ram, the last Von Erich, and Nacho Libre. Who wins?
Oh, shit.
Ooh.
Paige.
For the thousands in attendance and the millions watching online.
Yeah.
Let's get ready to rumble.
So Randy the Ram dies in the ring. Fine.
Yeah.
Perfect ending.
like he lands on Paige, dies immediately. Paige kicks him off.
Yeah.
We're not doing the whole narrative.
The Von Erich suffers the curse and also dies. Oh,
leaving just Paige and Nacho Libre.
Yeah, but then Nacho Libre fights himself to death.
Paige wins.
Paige wins.
Yeah, there you go.
Paige wins.
Good night.
All right, okay. We'll see you all later. Bye.
Bye.
Good night.
Oh, jeez, where's the out button?
Thanks for listening to the Periodic Table of Awesome podcast. If you have questions, please email info@theperiodictableofawesome.com. Find us on our website, www.theperiodictableofawesome.com, where there's links to our iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. Until next time, stay awesome.